Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah, Daf Chof Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Toward the end of our previous Shiur, we investigated the opinion of Shiloh, Tony Shiloh. Shiloh taught a Tanaic source regarding the issue of the purchase of a Pora Aduma from Gentiles. He introduced the source in which he quoted a pasuk, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'ikhu, and from that it was determined that Jews must be responsible for the sale of the Pora Aduma to the Tzibur, and not Gentiles. Hence one would not be allowed to buy a Pora Aduma, according to Rebbe Eliezer, from the Gentiles. The Gemara had then raised a question, and with that question we began also a series of questions, and that was indicated with a series marking a diamond that was found at the bottom of Chof Gimel Amud Beis. We find that by the stones of the Kohen Gadol's garments, precious stones, that they were purchased from a Gentile in a famous story involving Kibbutz Aviim. And the pasuk referring to the acquisition of the different materials needed for the construction of the Mishkan and other related materials, as we're making reference also to the Kohen Gadol's stones, the precious stones that were part of his raiment, it mentions in that pasuk the same idea. And that is, it said, Daber al b'nei Yisrael, v'ikuli truma, etc. And it mentions a list of items. And toward the end of the list, there appears these gems, avnei shoham v'avnei miluim. That is the point with which we are now picking up our shiur today. Namely, the question on the approach taken by the Toni Shiloh. The Gemara answers three lines from the top of Chof Dalid, last word in line, avnei Shoham Hifsik Ho'inyan. When you look at the pasuk, and we have included it in the, we've written it into the margin of our Gemara, our Shas Ozer, you can see the word Avnei Shoham is unlike the previous materials mentioned in the pasuk. All of the previous materials mentioned in the pasuk had a Vav written before them. For example, the last few items we saw there was the kesef unechoshes utcheles v'argamon v'soylas shoni v'oyrois elim adamim. All of those materials having a vav, which is a letter connecting the item to that which was mentioned before. So in effect, there was a domino effect of items that would connect back to the beginning where the pasuk said daber el b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu li truma, and that would give you license to darshan b'nei Yisrael yakichu, that Jews shall cause the sale, they shall be the sellers of these items and not the Gentiles. However, when you get to this pasuk, these materials, the avnei shoham, there's no vav preceding the word avnei, so it's not connected back. You don't have what's called the vav hachibur. That would then explain how these precious stones one could have purchased, as we saw in the story, from the Gentile. The Gemara now asks, and we have another diamond. This connects us to the series of questions that we are raising on the Toni Shiloh. How can you say that the stones are not connected to that which appeared before? The Gemara asks, V'avnei miluim ksiv dehoder arve. The next precious stone, V'avnei miluim, those are referred to by a vav before the word avnei, which connects us back to the previous topic, namely purchase from Jews only. So the question comes back again, how could they have entertained buying it from the Gentile if this is the approach to take? In other words, if the Toni Shiloh approach is the one to take, we're running into difficulty. And We should note that we are in the middle of a long question, as is illustrated by the long question marking the kuf that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text appears in a diamond and a vertical dashed line that descends from that kuf, indicating that the lines of Gemara that are opposite this marking all are part of a question. Hence, the Gemara goes on, V'oid. We have a little 2 written in here. This is a second part of this question. V'oid katoni seifa. The seifa means the latter part of the Tanaic source that we had started on the previous staff. This is also in a frame, you can see. So in the Gemara marking system, all Tanaic sources are placed in frames. So the Tanaic source, which is we'll call the seifa of Rebbe Eliezer, this is what Rashi refers to the ode. Rashi says, "Ha katani alo dahi de Rebbe Lazar." We have the seifa that says, "Lishona acheres noldo loy pora aduma beedro." The next year after the incident that was featured at the bottom of the of Chof Gimel Amud Beis, there was a story at the bottom of Chof Gimel Amud Beis featured Rebbe Eliezer, and the seifa of that says as follows: Lishona acheres noldo loy pora aduma beedro, a red heifer, the pora aduma, the poras chatos. This is the animal that is completely red haired cow and burnt for the purpose of using its ashes for tahara of on people that are tomei meis. So a cow like this, which was actually a very expensive, a very rare item, was born in his flock, in his herd. And nichnasu chachmei Yisrael etzloi, the leaders of Israel, the sages of Israel, approached him. Omar Lahem, and they approached him for purchasing this animal, and this Gentile said back to them, "Ani yode ani bochem shim ani mevakesh mikem kol momon shebo'olam atem noisnim li." That if I were to seek from you, to request of you a vast amount of money, all of the money of the world, an expression, you would give it to me. Achshav eini mevakesh mikem ela oisim momon shevsadeti b'shvil abo. I am now going to ask only the amount of money that I lost, so to speak, or that I did not profit last year when you came for the stones, because I was concerned with my father's honor and not waking him up. So what do we see from this particular source, which is a Rebbe Eliezer source, that Rebbe Eliezer allows the purchase of a Pora Aduma from a Gentile? Therefore, we are calling into question the whole approach that the Toni Shilo was taking. The Gemara answers, this is not a question on Toni Shilo. Hosom al yidei tagore Yisrael zovun. The purchase that was referred to from the Gentile was because the Gentile was not the one that sold it directly to the Tzibur, but rather it was the Gentile sold it to an agent. The agent was Jewish, and the agent who bought it from the Gentile, this Jewish agent, turned around and sold it to the public. The Gemara asks, still, according to the Toni Shilo, there seems to be no problem in the animal originating in the Rishus of a... According to the Toni Shilo, that we are saying here, that he allows for the sale from the Gentile to a Jewish intermediary, and from that intermediary or agent to the public. But is there no problem of the animal having been subjected to bestiality? So the Gemara asks also a long question, as you can see by the long kuf, the kuf that's with a diamond to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text and a vertical dashed line. So we've also employed a diamond marking based on Rashi, because Rashi says that the question here is a question on the Toni Shilo. Toni Shilo said that the basic restriction of red heifer of Paraduma being sold from Gentile to Jew is based on the Pasuk of Bnei Yisrael Vayikhu, that Jews must be responsible for the sale to the Tzibor. But is it not so that Rabbi Eliezer is concerned with something else, and it's that something else that gives rise to Rabbi Eliezer's restriction, and that is the concern about the animal having been used by the Gentile for immoral purposes. V'hatanya, let's read this again. Rabbi Eliezer lo chayish l'revia. Is Rabbi Eliezer not? Is that not which preoccupies him, which raises his concern, and hence Rabbi Eliezer's prohibition of buying directly from the goy, from the Gentile, would be because of the chashash revia, the hotanya. We have the following source: Amru lo the Rabbi Eliezer, ma'ase velakua min ha'ovei kechavim, v'doma shmo, v'amri lo, another version of who the Gentile was, remetz shmoi. The rabbanon who allow the purchase of the poraduma from the goyim, they said to Rabbi Eliezer that there was an incident where they bought it from a goy, and the goy's name was Doma, or some versions have Remetz. Omar Lahem Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, who objects to the direct purchase from a goy, he says, Misham Raya, are you trying to prove your position from that story? Yisrael hoyu mishamrin oisa mishal shenolda. The animal was under guard. Now when we say it was under guard, it says under guard from its birth. What are we guarding it from? So we were guarding it from the possibility of immoral relations, of chadei chashash revia. So we see from this source that Rabbi Eliezer's concern is not the gzeres hakosov that Tony Shilo was suggesting, which, according to Shilo, prohibited the purchase of the animal, of the poraduma, directly from the goy. According to the Tani Shilo, let's say that again, the prohibition was because of a pasuk. No, the prohibition we see in this source featuring Rabbi Eliezer is because of the chashash, of the suspicion that it may have been used for immorality. The Gemara answers on behalf of the Tani Shilo, Rabbi Eliezer Tarti Islay. Rabbi Eliezer has two considerations which serve to prohibit the purchase, the direct purchase of the poraduma from the Gentile. Number one, Islay Kicha, he does subscribe to that Gzeres HaKosuv of Bnei Daber Bnei Israel Vikhu, and we darshan Bnei Israel Yakichu Ve'eno Vikhavim Yakichu. Yakichu meaning cause the sale. And number two, V'chayish Nami L'Revia, and he is also concerned about the possibility that it was used for immorality. We have a slash in the Gemara indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. In effect, we are going to be quoting from that which was mentioned just a bit earlier, but the focus of our attention takes a new turn. On the side of the Gemara, the Nosei, Shmiras Paraduma Mepnei Chashash Revia, the guarding of the Paraduma to ascertain that it was, or to ensure that it was not subjected to bestiality. Omar Mar, Yisrael hoyu mishamrin oiso mishol shenolda. You'll note that in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, there's a little arrow that indicates attempt to find a previous arrow, and in at which point you'll find where this quote is coming from. In fact, it's coming from the source mentioned just a couple lines up, that indicated that the purchase from the goy was not a simple matter of Jewish community going to the goy out of the blue, but rather the animal that was purchased from the goy, and the Gemara indicated before that it was purchased through an agent, but all the same, that animal was under guard from the point of its birth. With the markings, we now see a new geometric form, the triangle, and there are a few of these. The triangle represents a series of questions on that which we are teaching. So, the first question is, V'nechush dilma ravi le'ima ki have me'abra. Should we not worry that maybe the mother of the Por Aduma. We said that we were watching the Por Aduma from the point of its birth. What about prior to the point of its birth? What about from the point that the mother was pregnant? The mother cow was pregnant with this red heifer. Maybe the mother was used for bestiality, and that would pose a problem. The Omar Rava, we momentary skip to point number two. Vlad Hanirbaas Asura, he uvlada nirbu. The embryo. The newborn of an animal, of a mother that was nirbas, that was used for bestiality, that vlad is forbidden, because while the mother was pregnant, the mother was subjected to immorality. That act was conducted on the entire animal unit, the entire entity. In other words, when a person conducted immorality with the pregnant mother, the immorality was experienced by the entire mother and everything contained within her, including her offspring, or the embryo at that point. So that when it's born, it is a creature that has become forbidden by virtue of the fact it was participant. It was a participant in the act of immorality while it was still inside its mother. We presented this Gemara, we skipped. Something that appeared in a brackets. Rava, in this case, teaches two points that focus on the relationship of an embryo to an event. In other words, what's the status of the offspring before it's born when it participates in an event while still inside its mother? The first halacha is not related to our sugya, hence we skipped it for the purpose of maintaining a flow in idea. But the first halacha, we'll go back now, it says, Rava says that Vlad Hanoigachas, a pregnant cow that gored a person and that gored a Yisrael, and he died as a result. So this is called a Shor HaNischal. The animal that kills a person is itself subject to the death penalty. Let's say it killed someone while pregnant. In other words, while the animal was pregnant, the animal went and gored somebody and killed him. So the halacha says, Vlad Hanoigachas Asura, he uvladonokhu. The offspring of a mother that gored and killed someone while it was pregnant, that offspring is Asura, means it's also to be offered as a sacrifice. It's also Lamizbeach, because it is viewed as if the Vlad was participant in the goring, and that's what it means, he uvlada nalchu. And the second halacha, which was relevant to us, was Vlad HaNirbaas Asurahi. The offspring is Asur to the Mizbeach, he uvlada nirba'u. We're saying that the offspring is participatory in the act of immorality. So the question is, how does it help when you say that the Vlad, the offspring, was under guard from the point it was born? There is still a possibility of its mother, while pregnant with it, having been subjected to immorality, and that would have rendered the offspring unfit for Por Aduma purposes. The Gemara answers, Ema, Yisrael hoyu mishamer noisa mishal shenoitzra. The animal was under Jewish guard from the point that it was conceived. In other words, the animal, the mother of this red heifer, was being watched from the point of its conceiving this offspring that eventually will be purchased by the community for tahara, for purification purposes. Question. V'nechush, notice we have a long question marking here to indicate that only by the point at which we end this long question will we really see what the question is. So the Gemara asks, V'nechush dilma ravua le'ima me'ikara. Is there not room to concern ourselves that maybe the mother was used in immorality from the outset, meaning before it was conceived, before the red heifer, before the Por Aduma that we're going to buy, before it was conceived, the mother was participant in an act of immorality, disnan. Kol apsulim legabi mizbeach, vlodoseun mutarin. All those creatures that are forbidden to the mizbeach, the first opinion, which we really have to de-emphasize for our current discussion, but the first opinion says that if an animal is unfit for the mizbeach, v'lodosei mutarin, the offspring, namely those that are conceived after the act done with the mother, the child, the offspring that's conceived after that act is mutter, is allowed. The Tani Allah, we've emphasized here with markings, the second shita, this is what we want to focus on. It was stated concerning, and there was a Mishnah, and there was a Brisa that follows, and we've included it all in one frame. Rabbi Eliezer Oser, Rabbi Eliezer prohibits the offspring of a mother that was once you, the mother before her pregnancy, was part of an act of immorality. It may be noteworthy that Rabbi Eliezer is really the focus of our discussion, because he is the shita that we've been analyzing when we started with the Tani Shila on the previous Amud. So we see that if you want to for the source above to teach, where Rabbi Eliezer himself appears and says that they were watching the offspring either from its point of birth, and then that was changed, and Rabbi Eliezer would really say from the point that the offspring was conceived, here we see that Rabbi Eliezer ought to concern himself with a point even earlier in time than the conception of the offspring that we're going to purchase, but he should be concerned with the mother's history, the mother cow's moral history. So the Gemara answers, Amah Yisrael hoyu mishamrin oisa la'ima misha shenoitra. That the more accurate reading of the source was, should be, that Jews were watching the mother from the point that the mother was formed, that the mother was Notzra. The Gemara asks, V'nechosh dilma rovua li'ima di'ima, maybe the grandmother of the animal that I am buying was subject to bestiality. So the Gemara says, Kulei hai lo chayshinan, that far back in the history of the animal that I'm buying, that far back in its history, we are not suspicious. We're not going to suspect a foul play. Omar Mar, Yisrael hoyu mishamen oisa misha shenoitra. It was suggested that the Jews were watching it from the point that it was conceived. So the Gemara asks, Mino yadinan, how would the Jews know that a Pora Aduma would be born, that they would know to keep guard from the point that it was conceived? Omar Rav Kahana, Kois Adoim Mavirin Lefonel B'Shosh She'ilo Oleo Zohar, when the mother is about to mate with the male, so the attendants would take a cup that was red or filled with a liquid of red content, kois adam, a red cup, and they would pass it in front of the mother while it is mating, and the sighting of the redness on the part of the mother would influence the coloring of the offspring. So they knew to, from the point of the mating, to already stand guard. Ihachi, if that be the case, if it's so easy, so to speak, to create a red cow, then amai domel yukarin, why is it such an expensive item? And we saw from the Gemara at the top of this Amud that it was very expensive. The Gemara answers, Hoyol ushte cyros post those ba. The reason is that if there are two hairs that are not red, then the animal is rendered unfit. So that even though it's we have control over the primary redness, but the redness level that allows it to be used, that allows it to be qualified as a poraduma, that redness level is very hard to achieve. And that's what jacks up the price. Umay shna didhu, why did they choose that Gentile family for passing this red cup and thereby influencing its cow to bear a poraduma? The family we refer to, of course, is the family of Doma ben Asina. Why were they chosen for this? Omar Rav Kahana, b'muchzekes. Rashi says, b'muchzekes min mishpachos porois hoyulo, the Doma ben Asina. They had a variety of cow in their herds that were muchzokis lele velodois adumim behavoras kois, that they would respond to this, their cows responded to this action of passing red cup at point of conception or at the point of mating. It seems from this that the red cup ability to influence the cows wasn't something that's across the boards. You have to own cows that respond to this. So this this family, the family of Doma ben Asina, had cows that responded to the red cup passing. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic heading assigned to it, and you can see this on the side of the Gemara. The Nosei, Ma hoyo hamasa umatan bein Rabbi Eliezer, sheposa behemos minagoyim, the korbanos, ubein hachachomim shechshiru. What was the discussion that took place between Rabbi Eliezer, who forbade the purchase of animals from Gentiles for the purposes of korbanos, and the chachomim, who said that it's okay? Yosef Rav Ami Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha Akilo de Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha. Rav Ami and Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha were sitting at the on the porch or the entrance of Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha's home. In other words, Rav Ami was apparently visiting Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha. So Rav Ami and the Balabais, Rabbi Yitzchok himself, were sitting at the entrance to Rabbi Yitzchok's home. Pasach Chad Minayu the Omar. Before we go any further, let's draw our attention to some of the markings. We have a double underline marking. This is to double underline. We have to add with dots in it, of course, to distinguish it from that which we've insert. We just noticed in our presentation that a section of Gemara was skipped. We failed to complete our question number 2. So before we can actually go on in the Gemara here, it is necessary for us to go back a few lines to the question number 2 that was featured in a triangle. We started the question, but unfortunately we didn't complete all of the lines of the Gemara. So as a matter of correction, we're going to go back and go over question number 2, and then proceed to this point in the Gemara featuring Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchok Nafcha. Question number 2, we're backing up a few lines. V'nechush Vilma Ravua Li'imo Meikora. Should we not concern ourselves with the possibility that the mother of the Por Aduma was used in bestiality? Disnan kol apsulim legabi mizbeach v'lodosein mutorin v'toni alo Rabbi Eliezer oser. We said that according to Rabbi Eliezer, if the mother of an animal that we want to use for sacrificial purposes was misused, was participant in immorality, the fact that the mother was participant in immorality will render the offspring unfit. Honicha l'Rava, the issue is a non-issue according to Rava. The Omar Rava Amar Rav Nachman, Machloikis kishenirbu kishehein mukdashin. Rabbi Eliezer forbids only if the mother was misused in immorality when it was sanctified. Avo kishen chulin, if the mother was misused when it was pre-sanctification, divrei hakol mutarin, then everyone will agree that the offspring is allowed. Therefore, in the case of the Pora Aduma, where the mother itself was not sanctified, since the mother was not sanctified, the offspring is not going to be affected by the fact that she may have been participant in immorality. Elo, the Rav Huna bar Chinina, Omar Rav Nachman. Notice we have these names double underlined to bring out the fact that they are arguing. They're actually two versions of Rav Nachman. So you have Rav Huna bar Chinina's version of Rav Nachman that says Machlokes kishenirbu kishen chulin, that the Machlokes Chachomim and Rabbi Eliezer concerning the immorality of the mother is a concern even when the mother was mundane, was non-sanctified. And in such a case, Rabbi Eliezer would forbid. Then, how? If he says that Rabbi Eliezer forbids, even if the mother was chulin, had they been sanctified, everyone would agree that the offspring is forbidden. My ikol amemar. So then, from what point would they have watched the mother of the Parah Aduma, according to Rabbi Eliezer? If the mother, during her entire lifetime, would have been, if used in bestiality, a source of rejection regarding her offspring. So how would it help any of the guarding that we did concerning the offspring's development? The mother herself is a point of problem. So to that, the Gemara answers, Emo Yisrael Hayu Mishamrin Oysa Le'imo Misha Oshinotra, that the mother was watched from the time that the mother herself was formed. The Gemara then went on to ask, and this we already learned before, V'nechush Duma Ravua Le'ima Dima, maybe the grandmother of the Parah Aduma was misused. So the Gemara answers to that, Kule Hai Loi Chayshinan, that far we don't concern ourselves. We go back now to the Gemara that we had started earlier. The Gemara raised the story of Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Nafcha sitting at the entrance to Rav Yitzchak's home. The discussion that follows in the Gemara, as we introduced earlier, was what was the discussion between the Tanoim, between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachomim? We have a double underline with dots in it to distinguish the use of a double underline that we had before. The double underline here is to help in seeing the difference between two Lishonos that will appear in the Gemara. We have a Roman numeral number 1 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. And a few lines down, you'll see a Roman numeral number 2. At that point, there is also a piece of Gemara in brackets. We might make mention right now that in terms of content of, let's say, legal discussion, legal material, there isn't much of a difference, if any, at all, between the two Lishonos. The primary difference between the two Lishonos concerns the speakers. Who is saying what? Hence, if you focus on the double underline with dots in it, marking feature, you'll be able to focus on who the speaker is at any given point, and hence be able to contrast the two Lashonos. So as we go on in the Gemara, Posach Chad Minayu, one of the two rabbis, you have Reb Ami and Reb Yitzchak, one of them opened up and said, Posach Chad Minayu Omar, V'chein Hoya Rabbi Eliezer Posa B'chol HaKorbonos Kulan. Rabbi Eliezer, just like he passled the Parah Aduma from the Goy, he passled all sacrifices brought in the Beis HaMikdash itself as a result of the chashash, of the suspicion of bestiality. Posach idoch minayu v'omar, the other Amoira that was sitting here said, Mai osivu le chavroi le Rebbe Eliezer. What did the chachamim who allow the animals purchased from Gentiles for korbanos, so what did they answer him? They said as follows, Kol Tzon Kedor Yukbitzu Loch. They cited a pasuk that indicates that sheep were purchased from Yishmael. Kedor is a reference to Yishmael, for they are Gentiles from Arabs. Omar Lohen Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that the pasuk that you're citing it from Yeshaya is a pasuk in referring to a future event. Kulam Geirim Grurim Heim Le'osid Lavo. All of those people will be converting on their own. Hurim is an indication of a ger that on his own decides to join in with Klal Yisrael, without going through, let's say, the official organs of conversion. But for our purposes, Rabbi Elazar is saying they basically have accepted upon themselves Judaism and Mimela, and therefore there is no chashash of bestiality, and there's no proof from that pasuk that animals were purchased from the Gentiles for korbonas. Omar of Yosef Maikra, what is the pasuk that indicates this pshat? That in the future they will all be converting. The pasuk says, Ki oz efoch el amim safa brua likroi kulam b'shem Hashem li avdoi shechem echad. That in the future they will all come to join and in calling out God's name and serve Him together. Omar le Abaye. Abaye asks Rav Yosef, V'dilma me'avodis k'chovim hu da hodur b'hu. Maybe their tshuva, their penitence, or their change of previous lifestyle is only with regard to idol worship. But as far as Ravi, as far as bestiality is concerned, who says that they will be doing tshuva from that mode of lifestyle? Amar le Rav Yosef, li'ovdoi shechem echad ksiv. We had actually written this in between the lines just before, so that you could see where it's coming from. The pasuk says that they're going to call out in God's name, which that in and of itself might have shown that they are turning away from idol worship. But the pasuk goes on to say this, la'avdo shechem echad, means to serve Him shoulder to shoulder, so to speak. Everyone serving together indicates all other mitzvahs as well they will attempt to observe, and hence abandon bestiality. Rav Popa Masni Hachi. As mentioned earlier, we have brackets here. The brackets here are not designed for skipping purposes, per se, but rather to show the parameters, the boundaries of the second girsa, the second version of the interchange that we noted at the Roman numeral number 1. We'll now go over we'll go through the second version, and you'll see, as far as content is concerned, they're basically the same. The difference lies in who the speakers are at any given point. So if you focus on the double underline with dots in it, you can easily contrast the differences. Rav Zvid, the Gemara said that Rav Papa Masni Hachi means that up till this point was Rav Papa's version of the discussion between Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. Rav Zvid Masni Hachi. Rav Zvid's version is as follows. Utravayu Amri, both of them, Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak, together, as opposed to the first lashon, there was a give and take between them. There the Gemara said, Posach chad minayu, one of them opened and spoke. Here, Travayu Amri, both of them are saying, Rav Yitzchak and Rav Ami, V'chein hoya Rav Elazar posa b'chol ha-korbonos, that in addition to the poraduma as being unfit as far as a purchase from a Gentile, so too all sacrifices cannot be purchased from Gentiles. V'travayu Amri, and both Amoroyim, Rav Ami and Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, said, Umayo sivu le'chavroi l'Rav Elazar, what did the arguers, the ones that differed from Rav Elazar, answer him? So they said, Kol tzon kedor yikbitsu loch v'chulei. They quoted the pasuk indicating that animals are purchased from Kedar, from the Yishmaelim, for korbanos. Amar Rabbi Eliezer. So to that, Rabbi Eliezer would respond, Kulam geirim gruim heim la'asid lavo. All of them will be adopting Judaism in the future. Umay kro, and what pasuk suggests that? Ki oz hefoich el amim safa brua likroi kulam v'shem Hashem. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, you can't bring any proof from the pasuk of Tzon Kedar, because that's referring to a time in which all of the Gentiles will be accepting the laws of the Torah upon them, including the prohibition of bestiality. Maskif lo Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef challenges that by asking, V'dilma me'avodis k'chovim hu da'hajibu. Maybe that pasuk, that future pasuk, indicates that they are turning away only from idolatry, but they're not turning away from bestiality. Amalei Abaye, Abaye answers that La'avdoi Shechem Echad Ksiv. The pasuk says to worship all together, shoulder to shoulder, so to speak. Meaning, when they are going to turn to Hashem, they're going to turn to Hashem and all of His Torah teachings as well, including the prohibition of bestiality. And hence, Rabbi Eliezer maintains his position that from the pasuk of Tzon Kedar, you cannot bring a proof that we overlook the suspicion of bestiality. Because that pasuk is talking about a different time period when, in fact, there will be no chashash. But up till that point, there is what to concern oneself with. At this point in the Gemara, we have a new series marking, a house form. This house form, you'll notice with a colored in tip to distinguish it from the house form that appeared on the previous Amud. These are going to be Kushyos al Rabbi Eliezer Mipsukim. We're going to be raising questions on Shitas Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana Rabbi Eliezer, from Psukim, which indicate that purchases of animals for Korbanos did take place from Goyim. In other words, we bought Korbanos from Goyim. Meisvei, Vayomer Moshe, Gam Ato Titen Biodenu Zvachim Ve'Oilois. Moshe says to Paro, you will give us animals to slaughter as sacrifice, to offer as vochim v'oilois. And that's a kashin Rebbe Lezer. So the Gemara says, koide matan Torah shayni. That which took place before the giving of the Torah is different. In other words, everything that we have been speaking about till now, about the prohibition of buying animals from Goyim for korbanos, that's a prohibition that's set in after matan Torah. Another question, Toshma, Vayikach Yisroi, Choisein Moshe, Oilo Zvochim Lelokim. The assumption right now in this question is Yisro was a Gentile, and it says here that he brought sacrifices from animals. Now, he was a Gentile. The Gemara says, Yisroi Nami Koide Matan Torah Have. The event featured in Shmos Perik Yudches, with Yisro offering sacrifices, this was before the giving of the Torah, and therefore, as we just mentioned before, the restriction doesn't exist. Yisro Torah, that works out according to the opinion that says that Yisro, the Yisro event was before Matan Torah. Matan Torah, but according to the opinion, and this is the subject of a controversy in the Shas, there is an opinion that says that the Yisro event took place after Matan Torah. Therefore, we see that Gentiles can be the source of animals for the bringing of korbanos. The Gemara answers to that, even according to that opinion, that Yisro was after Matan Torah, and that we're viewing Yisro as a Gentile. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, Elo Yisro mi Yisrael Zovan. Yisro, who brought those korbanos, he bought them from a Jew. Toshma. The series of questions continues. Vayoymer Shol, me Amaleki Havium, Asher Chamal Ha'om, Al Meitav Hatzon Vabokar, Leman Zvoyach Lashem Elokecha. From this pasuk we see, we've dashed underline Amaleki, and we see also Zvoach Lashem, the offering of the animals as a korban. Where did these animals come from? From the Amaleki, from Gentiles. That's a kasha on Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara answers, my meitav, demei meitav. The pasuk said that the animals, they brought the animals from that which they left over when they were fighting the Amaleki. They left over, they had compassion, so to speak, on the meitav hatzon. What is meitav? Meitav means demei meitav. In other words, they battled the Amaleki. They left alive the animals. Which animals? The best animals, the highest quality animals they left alive, and then sold those animals and used the money to buy korbanos. So they weren't using the animals of the Gentiles. They simply took the animals of the Gentiles and sold them. They sold them, but which animals? The best animals. The Gemara asks, Umay Shno Meitav?
of what significance is it that they sold the best animals, that they, those were the animals that they preserved and then sold. The more answers, the logic behind that is ki hechi delikvitz alein zavina, literally having to do with making it easier for them to sell it. People, there's a greater demand for high quality animals, so that when they battled the Amaleki and left alive the best quality animals, that would enable them to that would facilitate the sale of those surviving animals, so to speak, or those preserved animals, enabling to get their money, to get money from them more easily. Toshma, another question. Vayomer Aravno El David. Aravno is the name of a person who owned the land that eventually became the Har HaBayis, the place the Beis HaMikdash was built upon. The assumption for our Gemara right now is that he was a Gentile, an idol worshipper. So, but the pasuk says, "Vayomer Aravno David." Aravno addressed David HaMelech and said, "Yikach v'yaal Adoni HaMelech atoiv be'enov re'e habokor lo'oila v'hamorigim uklei habokor lo'etzim." For our purposes, we've dashed underlined the word lo'oila, and we've also dashed underlined Aravna's name. What are we accomplishing by this? But we're showing you that an ola, korban, was acquired from an idol worshipper. And that's against Rabbi Eliezer, who said that we prohibit the acquisition of animals for sacrificial purposes from Gentiles. Omar Rav Nachman, Aravna ger toishev hoya. Aravna was a person, although he wasn't Jewish, he had a status known as Ger Toshav. This is a person that accepted upon himself the observing of the seven Noahide laws. Therefore, included in the seven Noahide laws, the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, is the prohibition of bestiality. Therefore, there was no suspicion with regard to Aravna and the Chashash Revi'ah. At this point in the Gemara, we have a bracketed section, and the reason for these brackets is explained. We offer an explanation on the side where the star appears, because at this point we are going to be dealing with a detail that was just mentioned in the pasuk, after which we get back into the flow of questions. As you can see, there is another house form with the colored in tip, mesve. Then the next question again will be a question from a pasuk, a question on Rabbi Eliezer, where we see from a pasuk animals acquired from Gentiles for the purposes of korbanos. But before we get to that, having given this brief introduction, we can now go through the bracketed section. My morigim, the pasuk mentioned two lines up at the end of the line, the word Morigin. What does that word mean? Omar Ula. Ula answers, he's going to answer with an expression we won't know the meaning of. He says, Mita Shel Turbil. Morigin is a Mita Shel Turbil. The Gemara asks, my Mita Shel Turbil. Well, what's that? So the Gemara answers, Iza de Kurkisa de Daishan. Rashi explains that this is a very heavy piece of wood that was fully notched, and having this very rough surface, when placed upon grains, harvested grains, the heavy board was then trampled upon by an animal. So the weight of the animal and this heavy board with the notches in it served to crack the shells and the stalks attached to the grains, making it eventually suitable for the winnowing process. So this is called, this is part of the disha process, the crushing or the threshing process in the production of eventually flour. So the pasuk that mentioned Morigim is explained now by as a reference to, in addition to the different items that Aravna told David HaMelech to take, he said take the animals as sacrifices and take the Morigim as well. These, we'll call them threshing boards. Omar of Yosef, my craw, what pasuk indicates that Morigim is associated with the crushing of something? So here we have a pasuk that explains that. Hine samtich lemoirag. That has been dashed, underlined, because this is the word we are defining. Morigim, or in the singular, morag. Chorutz, that is notched. And chadosh, val pifios. Todush, we've also dashed, underlined that word, todush. This is disha, this is the crushing. It says, todush harim v'todok ugvois kamoitz tosim. For our purposes, without getting into the literal or translation of the pasuk, we see morags, the role of a morag is todush, for disha, for crushing purposes. Meisvei, as we mentioned before, we go back to the questions on Rabbi Eliezer from Sukkim. It says, V'es haporos helu oilo lashem. Without getting into all of the historical background to this particular pasuk, it refers to cows that came from the plishtim, from idol worshippers. These are cows that miraculously brought the Oron back to the Jewish people from captivity after it was lost in a battle with the plishtim. These cows were offered as an oilo lashem. The Gemara says, well, that's no real question. That was a momentary ruling, a one-time halachic allowance. And that was because of a miracle that happened involving these cows. So it was felt that since a miracle took place concerning these cows, they were to be offered as a korban. But otherwise, no. At this point in the Gemara, we have a bracket. Now, the purpose of these brackets is not for skipping purposes, because that which appears after the brackets is going to be, in effect, an unrelated discussion to what we have right now. But it is here to establish the parameters of a discussion, and that we've indicated with our note on the inside margin where we've written in Matrasa Sagrayim. The purpose of these of this bracketed section, he the voided hanisoyon the siwa dechiyasa, is to isolate an attempt to support that which was just said. Namely, we just said there was a hiras shaw and a rejection of that attempted support. So that having been said, we go continue in the Gemara. We just said that the poros that were offered, even though they came from the plishtim, that was done under the guise of a hiruas shoyal, a momentary halachic ruling that does not serve as precedent for anything. Hachi nami mistabra. It's also likely, it's also reasonable to say that the eloi tema hachi. If you don't say this, in other words, if you say that the case involving the poros from the plishtim is standard fare, then the pasuk indicates that there were poros. Poros are female animals. An ola korban does not come from an ola korban is not to be brought from a female animal. In other words, a female animal is unfit to serve as an ola korban, and yet they were offered as olos. So how can you explain that other than by saying that it must have been a hiruas shah, a one-time ruling, and that it's an exceptional case? The Gemara says that is not necessarily the case. In other words, we can't use the fact that it was a female and brought as an ola to prove that it was a hiruas shah. That is going to be challenged right now by a long, we call it a rejection. You notice to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a Dalid that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating that all of the subsequent lines opposite this dashed marking are part of this rejection. We are rejecting the Hochi Nami Mistabra. Umay Kushya, how does this pose any difficulty? In other words, how does the fact that it was a nekeva show us that it was a hirasha? Dilma bebomas yochid, maybe the offering was on a private altar. Rav Ado bar Avo, he teaches the following law. Minayin le'oilu nekeva shikshiru bebomas yochid. From where do we know that a nekeva, an ola nekeva, a female korbanola, is acceptable when dealing with a private altar? Private altars, parenthetically, were
allowed at certain points in Jewish history before the construction of the Beis Hamikdash. It was on and off regarding the Bomas Yochids being allowed. So the case, the time in history when the Plishtim cows were offered as olas was a time that Bomas Yochid was allowed. And Rav Adabar Avo points out that based on a posik which we will see very shortly, that an olas nekeva is allowed when dealing with a private altar. Shneamar vayikach Shmuel tlei cholav echad vayaalehu oila. Shmuel took a tlei cholav echad, which and offered it up as an ola. We're assuming that we're talking about a female animal. The Gemara asks, no, you don't see proof from that. Vayaalehu zohar mashma. The word that appears in the pasuk that it was offered up as a korban is a word in a masculine form. Vayaalehu is a masculine form. So we don't see from there a basis for Rav Ado Bar Ava's teaching. The Gemara answers, Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Vaya'aloh Siv. Though the word may be read as Vaya'alehu, the writing is written in the feminine form, Vaya'aloh. And as a result of that, Rav Ado Bar Ava feels that you can see from this pasuk that a female animal is suitable when dealing with a Bomas Yochid, a private altar, is suitable. A female is suitable as an Ola. At this point in the Gemara, we encounter a geometric form. I would, on the one hand, term it a new geometric form. However, this is really a tie-in to a Gemara that appeared a couple of daf before. We encountered on daf Chof Gimel, or more accurately Chof Beis Amud Beis, a contradiction concerning the issue of entrusting animals to Goyim and the Chashash Revia. The opening mission of the Perek suggested that one's not allowed to entrust animals to Goyim because of the Chashash that they will engage in bestiality. On the other hand, the Tanaic source featured at the top of Chof Beis Amud Beis says, I'm allowed to purchase from Goyim animals for korbanos, which would indicate that the Goyim are not suspect in bestiality. Rav Yochanan, at this point in the Gemara, and you can see this very clearly in the Tosfos and Rashi as well, is a Tosfos that we've dashed underlined, the second Tosfos on the page. If you just look at the dashed underlined section, it says, Koi Vishnui Rumyo Demasnisin, the Ein Mamidim, that this is here to resolve the contradiction between the mission on the one hand that says we don't entrust our animals to the Goyim, Vehahi, the Loikun Mein Behemo the Korban, the second source that was featured at the top of Chof Beis and Beis, it says I can purchase from them, from the Gentiles, animals for korban, for sacrificial purposes. The Aliba de Rabbonan Ko'omar, and this is according to this issue, this discussion is within Shitas Rabbonan. As far as Rabbi Elazar is concerned, he is strict across the board, so that there would have been no, he doesn't allow the purchase of animals from the Goyim. So in the case of Shitas Rabbi Elazar, there is no real contradiction to deal with. But according to the Rabbonan that author our Mishnah, that say Ein Ma'amidim, we don't entrust our animals to them, on the other hand they allow the purchase of korbanos from them, how do you resolve that? So up till now we've had three suggested resolutions. This is a fourth, and hence, with our markings, you can see a Roman number 4 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, with a bow tie form around it. And we now turn to the Gemara itself. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Gvul Yesh Lo. There is a boundary in time concerning the purchase of animals from goyim. Pchuso mibas shalosh shanim ne'ekeres. An animal that's used in bestiality under 3 years of age will become barren. And since the animal will become barren if it's used in bestiality, the goy, the Gentile owner, doesn't want his animal to be ruined. Therefore, he won't engage in bestiality with animals under 3 years of age. Therefore, there's no chashash of revia, and those animals can be purchased from the goyim. So that in general, well, let us just go on another line of Gemara. It says, Bas Sholoshonim, Eino Ne'ekeres, an animal that's 3 years of age, it's sufficiently mature that if it is used in bestiality, it will not become barren. Hence, the goy will engage in bestiality with it. And as a result of that, those kind of animals, I would not be able to purchase from them. And I would be choshesh for revia. So as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, when you look back on Daf Chof Beis, we don't have to say that there's any contradiction. In general, there is a chashash of bestiality, and that's why ein ma'amidim, that's why we don't entrust our animals by them. And in addition to that, they will engage in bestiality even with their own animals, because they won't be ruining them, provided the animal is over 3 years of age. However, if it's under 3 years of age, the goy, the Gentile, won't be involved with bestiality, and that will be the explanation of the source that says I can buy korbonos from them. What am I buying from them? I'm buying animals under 3 years of age. Eisve kol hani tyufta. The Gemara here is using shorthand and says that there was raised all of the objections, all of the psukim that we saw in the previous sugya, and the sugya above, and that started on Omid Aleph. There were all the psukim that were mashma that it's mutter to offer korbanos using animals owned by goyim. So they were, those questions, those psukim were raised as a kashan Rabbi Yochanan. And Shoni Lehu, and Rabbi Yochanan answered regarding each one of those psukim, Pusa Mibas Shaloshanim. The animals featured there were under 3 years of age, and hence there was no Chashash Revia, because otherwise, if they would have been used in bestiality, so they would have been rendered barren, and the owner, the Goy, would not have wanted that to happen. Toshma. We raise a question from another pasuk, something we saw above. V'es haporos he'elu oilo l'Hashem. This was quoted above. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara to make it easier to find where this is coming from. This is a reference to the cows that were offered as oilois, cows that originated amongst the plishtim. So Rabbi Yochanan answers, b'pchusa mibal sholoshanim. These were under 3 years of age. The cows there were under 3 years of age. We might note that in our markings, in order to keep track of the back and forth discussion here, we are employing a trapezoid form with the narrow part up, and then it'll flip over. When the narrow part is up, we are presenting a question. When the narrow part of this trapezoid form is down, we are presenting a response. So the Gemara raises the last question that was raised concerns the offering of cows brought from the plishtim. So Rabbi Yochanan would answer, they were under 3 years of age. Well, maski flor Rav Huna brei derav Nosan. See the trapezoid form with the narrow part facing up. We have a question. He says, in Cain, if you're going to say they were under 3 years of age, I don't understand the continuation of the pasuk. It says, im Cain hainu v'yaz b'neim kolu b'bayis, p'chusa b'vashola shanim mi koyoda. V'hotnan. This question
is asking, and it continues, how can you say that the animals acquired from the Plishtim were under 3 years? The Pasuk features those animals as having offspring, and animals under, cows under 3 years of age don't bear offspring. And the Gemara goes on to prove that from a halacha concerning b'chor, concerning an issue of sofek b'chor. A b'chor is a creature, firstborn animal, an animal that that is a firstborn from its mother, while owned by a Jew, is then given to the kohen and offered as a korban b'chor. So concerning that topic, we see a source, the Hotnan. Let's go over this again. The Gemara had said, "Pchusa mibashol shonim mi kol yolda." An animal under 3 doesn't bear children. For Hotnan, we have the following source: "Pora v'chamor mibas shalosh vaday l'koyhein." That means that if I bought a pora or a chamor before it passed 3 years of age, let us say I bought it, and I didn't know anything about its history of bearing offspring. Well, if I bought it before it completed 3 years of age, I know that the birth that takes place in my Rishus is a firstborn, because before 3 years it would not bear any children, the Pora and the Chamor. Mikan v'elech, if, however, I buy an animal that is more than 3 years of old, 3 years of age, and I don't know if it bore children, suffik, then it becomes a suffik b'chor, and there are a separate set of halachas that govern a suffik b'chor. But we're not going to involve ourselves with hilchos b'chor right now. What we do see from this is that to say regarding the plishtim acquired animals that they were under 3 is ruled out. They were not under 3 because the Pasuk describes those plishtim animals as having offspring. And yet, we have these over 3 years old animals, where, as we explained before, they would not have been rendered barren had they been used in bestiality. Hence, there is no deterrent on the part of the goy from conducting immorality with the animal, because it's over 3, and yet they were offering it as korbanos. So Rabbi Yochanan's distinction of under 3, over 3, namely, under 3 you could buy from them, over 3 you're not allowed to buy from them, here we see over 3 animals that were used as korbanos. Therefore, the Gemara goes on to say, "Elo machvarta kidishonin meikora." Rather, it's more likely, in order to resolve the contradiction, as was explained earlier. Since we mentioned the cows brought the Oron back from captivity in amongst the Plishtim, the Gemara goes on with that topic. Vayisharno haporos baderech al derech beis shemesh. The Gemara asks, "My vayisharno? What does that word mean?" Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Shomru Shira. Vayisharno means they sang. The cows sang or uttered Shira. They uttered praise of Hashem. The Chain Omar Rav Zutra Bartuvia Omar Rav Sheokmu Pneim Keneged Aron. They twisted or turned their heads toward the Aron. In other words, these cows were drawing a cart on which the Aron was located, was placed. When, as they were walking along, they turned their heads facing the Aron, which was in back of them. The Omru Shira, and they sang praise. Omai Shira Omru. In this Gemara, we're going to see a number of opinions. It may be noteworthy that as a result of the names cited in this Gemara, there will be several pieces of Gemara on the next Omid, on Daf Chof Hei, that are featured because the same names, some of the same names appear. So it's worth drawing one's attention to the different names that we see here in anticipation of the Gemara on the next Omid. In other words, the sugyas that we will see later are going to be cited not because of any direct connection other than the fact that the same names appear. So the question right now is what Shira was said. Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Meir, Oz Yoshir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael, and in that pasuk it says Ki Ga'oi Ga'a. This is a reference to the Shira that was said by the Moshe and the Jewish people in crossing the Yam Suf at the point of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the cows sang that. Number two, Rabbi Yochanan Didei, that means Rabbi Yochanan, instead of quoting Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yochanan has his own personal opinion as to what was said. Omar v'amartem b'yom ahu, hoidu l'ashem kiru v'shmoi. That is what the cow said. Number three, Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish, Omar, mizmoro yasmo, mizmor shiru l'ashem shir chadosh, ki niflois osa, hoshialoi yaminoi uzroa kodshoi. The expression of Mizmor Yasmo means a Mizmor without a name in it. Some have some Mizmorim begin with names in it. Mizmor LeDavid, for example, or Mizmor LeVnei Korach. This is a Mizmor that doesn't have a name. It's called therefore called Mizmor Yasmo. Yasmo literally means an orphan. It means without a name. And this posuk, this is what they had recited. That's Tehillim Tzadi Ches. Number four, Rabbi Elazar Omar, Hashem Moloch Yirgazu Amim. Number five, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omar, Hashem Moloch Geus Lovesh. Number six, Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha Omar. We've indicated here an Aleph because this represents the first version of a particular opinion. The Gemara later will offer something else at the point in which we'll find a Beis written in. But Rav Yitzchak Nafcha says they said the following: Roini, Roini, Hashita. Roini, Roini has to do with joy. Hashita is a reference to the Oron, the holy ark that was made of Shita wood. Shita is a type of tree. Hisnoifafi Beroiv Haderech. Hisnoifafi means rise up. Rise up on the road. Hamechushekis Berikme Zahav. That's mechushekes means tied to or attached to it. Berikme zav is a reference to the gold coating that the oron was lined with gold from within and from without. Hamehulala bedvir armoin. Dvir is a reference to the Sefer Torah that was in the oron. The Gemara in Bava Basra actually presents two opinions: whether either it was in the oron or next to the oron. So, Devir is a reference to the Sefer Torah. Umefuora ba'ade adoyim. And there's nothing more beautiful than this. Rav Ashi Masni La, Laha de Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, Aha. The text that we just went through, this beginning with the expression Roni Roni Hashita, this particular text, according to Rav Ashi, it applies to a different event in history. The pasuk says, "Vayhi ben so Aaron, vayomer Moshe, kumo Hashem." The pasuk here refers to the Jews carrying of the Aaron during the Yetzias Mitzrayim. The pasuk says that Moshe declared, "Kumo Hashem," v'chule, etc. Yisrael, my omru. What was the response of the Jews to Moshe's comment? Omer of Yitzchak Nafcha, the Jews responded, we could say there was like a chorus response on the part of the Jews, Roni, Roni Hashita v'chulei, the text that we saw just above. Omer Rav, Keman Koru Parsoi L'Safra Dvir, what is the basis of the Persians referring to a scroll, a sefer, by the term Dvir? The Gemara made reference to the word Dvir in the text that we saw on the Roni Roni text that was supplied to us by Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. Now that word is understood by the Gemara to be a Persian word, and the Gemara here is analyzing the roots of that word. Where does that word that's used by the Persians namely the word devir, where do we see it in the context of a sefer? So the answer is mehocha, from the following pasuk we can see this. It says v'shem devir lefanim kiryas sefer. And you see here the word devir in juxtaposition with the word sefer. Omar Rav Ashi, keman koru parsoi v'nido dashna. Once we're already getting into etymology, so there's another word that arises in our analysis, and it is from based on what do the Persians refer to a woman during the monthly female period, which we call Nida. They refer to that by the term Dashtina. So the Gemara answers that word that they use, Dashtina, is in effect an abbreviation of something found in a posuk. Mehocha, from the following. This involves the story where Rochel responds to her father in his request for her to get up from her bed. She says, I can't get up from the bed right now. Ki derech noshim li. I'm experiencing the way of women. So if you take the expression derech noshim, you see that can be read in an abbreviated form as by the word dashtina. With that, we complete our shiur for today.